Chapter 30. And didst thou see her flung into the oil? And didn't the soothing oil, the emollient oil, refuse to boil, good heads off and to spoil the fairest lady ever eyes did look on? Faith, good my liege, I had no heart to look and see a bodious lady boiling down. I took your royal message to Padella, and bore his back to you. I told him you would hold Prince Bulbo answerable. He only said that he had 20 sons as good as Bulbo, and forthwith he bade the ruthless executioners proceed. O cruel father, O unhappy son! Cried the king. Go, some of you, and bring Prince Bulbo hither. Bulbo was brought in chains, looking very uncomfortable. Though a prisoner, he had been tolerably happy, perhaps because his mind was at rest, and all the fighting was over, and he was playing at marbles with his guards, when the king sent for him. Oh, my poor Bulbo, said his majesty, with looks of infinite compassion, hast thou heard the news? For you see Giglio wanted to break the thing gently to the prince, thy brutal father has condemned Rosalba PPP utter to death, PPP Prince Bulbo. What, killed Betsinda? Boo-hoo-hoo, cried out Bulbo. Betsinda! Pretty Betsinda! Dear Betsinda! She was the dearest little girl in the world. I love her better 20,000 times even than Angelica. And he went on expressing his grief in so hearty and unaffected a manner that the king was quite touched by it, and said, shaking Bulbo's hand, that he wished he had known Bulbo sooner. Bulbo, quite unconsciously, and meaning for the best, offered to come and sit with his majesty, and smoke a cigar with him, and console him. The royal kindness supplied Bulbo with a cigar. He had not had one, he said, since he was taken prisoner. And now think what must have been the feelings of the most merciful of monarchs, when he informed his prisoner that, in consequence of King Padella's cruel and dastardly behavior to Rosalba, Prince Bulbo must instantly be executed. The noble Giglio could not restrain his tears, nor could the grenadiers, nor the officers, nor could Bulbo himself, when the matter was explained to him, and he was brought to understand that his majesty's promise, of course, was above everything, and Bulbo must submit. So poor Bulbo was led out, heads off trying to console him, by pointing out that, if he had won the Battle of Bombardero, he might have hanged Prince Giglio. Yes. But that is no comfort to me now, said poor Bulbo. Nor indeed was it, poor fellow. He was told the business would be done the next morning at 8, and was taken back to his dungeon, where every attention was paid to him. The gaoler's wife sent him tea, and the turnkey's daughter begged him to write his name in her album, where a many gentlemen had written it on like occasions. Other your album, says Bulbo. The undertaker came and measured him for the handsomest coffin which money could buy. Even this didn't console Bulbo. The cook brought him dishes which he once used to like, but he wouldn't touch them. He sat down, and began writing an adieu to Angelica, as the clock kept always ticking, and the hands drawing nearer to next morning. The barber came in at night, and offered to shave him for the next day. Prince Bulbo kicked him away, and went on writing a few words to Princess Angelica, as the clock kept always ticking, and the hands hopping nearer and nearer to next morning. He got up on the top of a hatbox, on the top of a chair, on the top of his bed, on the top of his table, and looked out to see whether he might escape as the clock kept always ticking, and the hands drawing nearer, and nearer, and nearer. But looking out of the window was one thing, and jumping another. And the town clock struck 7. So he got into bed for a little sleep, but the gaoler came and woke him, and said, get up, your royal highness, if you please, it's 8:10. So poor Bulbo got up. He had gone to bed in his clothes, the lazy boy, and he shook himself, and said he didn't mind about dressing, or having any breakfast, thank you. And he saw the soldiers who had come for him. Eat on, he said, and they led the way, deeply affected. And they came into the courtyard, and out into the square, and there was King Giglio come to take leave of him, and his majesty most kindly shook hands with him, and the gloomy procession marched on. When hark! Ha-wur-ah-wur-ah-wur! A roar of wild beasts was heard. And who should come riding into the town, frightening away the boys, and even the beadle and policeman, but Rosalba. The fact is, that when Captain Hedzoff entered into the court of Snapdragon Castle, and was discoursing with King Padella, the lions made a dash at the open gate, gobbled up the six beefeaters in a jiffy, and away they went with Rosalba on the back of one of them, and they carried her, turn and turn about, till they came to the city, where Prince Giglio's army was encamped. When the king heard of the queen's arrival, you may think how he rushed out of his breakfast room to hand her majesty off her lion. The lions were grown as fat as pigs now, having had hog and armo and all those beefeaters, and were so tame, anybody might pat them. While Giglio knelt most gracefully, and helped the princess, Bobo, for his part, rushed up and kissed the lion. He flung his arms round the forest monarch. He hugged him, and laughed and cried for joy. H, you darling old beast, oh, how glad I am to see you, and the dear, dear Betts that is, Rosalba. What, is it you, poor Bulbo? Said the queen. H, how glad I am to see you, and she gave him her hand to kiss. King Giglio slapped him most kindly on the back, and said, Bulbo, my boy, I am delighted, for your sake, that her majesty has arrived. So am I, said Bulbo, and you know why. Captain Hedzoff here came up. Ire, it is 8:30. Shall we proceed with the execution? Execution? What for? Asked Bulbo. An officer only knows his orders, replied Captain Hedzoff, showing his warrant. On which His Majesty King Giglio smilingly said Prince Bulbo was reprieved this time, and most graciously invited him to breakfast. XVII. How a tremendous battle took place, and who won it? As soon as King Padella heard, what we know already, that his victim, the lovely Rosalba, had escaped him, His Majesty's fury knew no bounds, and he pitched the Lord Chancellor, Lord Chamberlain, and every officer of the crown whom he could set eyes on, into the cauldron of boiling oil prepared for the princess. Then he ordered out his whole army, horse, foot, and artillery, and set forth at the head of an innumerable host, and I should think 20,000 drummers, trumpeters, and fifers. King Giglio's advance guard, you may be sure, kept that monarch acquainted with the enemy's dealings, and he was in no wise disconcerted. He was much too polite to alarm the princess, his lovely guest, with any unnecessary rumors of battles impending. On the contrary, he did everything to amuse and divert her, gave her a most elegant breakfast, dinner, lunch, and got up a ball for her that evening, when he danced with her every single dance. Poor Bulbo was taken into favor again, and allowed to go quite free now. He had new clothes given him, was called "why good cousin" by His Majesty, and was treated with the greatest distinction by everybody. But it was easy to see he was very melancholy. The fact is, the sight of Betsinda, who looked perfectly lovely in an elegant new dress, set poor Bulbo frantic in love with her again. And he never thought about Angelica, now Princess Bulbo, whom he had left at home, and who, as we know, did not care much about him. The king, dancing the 25th polka with Rosalba, remarked with wonder the ring she wore. And then Rosalba told him how she had got it from Gruffanuff, who no doubt had picked it up when Angelica flung it away. Yes, says the fairy Blackstick, who had come to see the young people, and who had very likely certain plans regarding the mad ring I gave the queen, Giglio's mother, who was not, saving your presence, a very wise woman. It is enchanted, and whoever wears it looks beautiful in the eyes of the world. I made poor Prince Bulbo, when he was christened, the present of a rose which made him look handsome while he had it, but he gave it to Angelica, who instantly looked beautiful again, whilst Bulbo relapsed into his natural plainness. Rosalba needs no ring, I am sure, says Giglio, with a low bow. She is beautiful enough, in my eyes, without any enchanted aid. Oh, sir, said Rosalba. Take off the ring and try, said the king, and resolutely drew the ring off her finger. In his eyes she looked just as handsome as before. The king was thinking of throwing the ring away, as it was so dangerous, and made all the people so mad about Rosalba. But being a prince of great humor, and good humor too, he cast eyes upon a poor youth who happened to be looking on very disconsolately, and said, Bulbo, my poor lad, come and try on this ring. The Princess Rosalba makes it a present to you. The magic properties of this ring were uncommonly strong, for no sooner had Bulbo put it on, but lo and behold, he appeared a personable, agreeable young prince enough with a fine complexion, fair hair, rather stout, and with bandy legs. But these were encased in such a beautiful pair of yellow morocco boots, that nobody remarked them. And Bulbo's spirits rose up almost immediately, after he had looked in the glass, and he talked to their majesties in the most lively agreeable manner, and danced opposite the queen with one of the prettiest maids of honor, and after looking at her majesty, could not help saying, how very odd, she is very pretty, but not so extraordinarily handsome. H no, by no means, says the maid of honor. But what care I, dear sir, says the queen, who overheard them, if you think I am good-looking enough. His majesty's glance in reply to this affectionate speech was such that no painter could draw it. And the fairy Blackstick said, bless you, my darling children. Now you are united and happy, and now you see what I said from the first, that a little misfortune has done you both good. You, Giglio, had you been bred in prosperity, would scarcely have learned to read or write. You would have been idle and extravagant, and could not have been a good king as now you will be. You, Rosalba, would have been so flattered, that your little head might have been turned like Angelica's, who thought herself too good for Giglio. As if anybody could be good enough for him, cried Rosalba. Oh, you darling, says Giglio. And so she was. And he was just holding out his arms in order to give her a hug before the whole company, when a messenger came rushing in, and said, my lord, the enemy. To arms, cries Giglio. Oh, mercy, says Rosalba, and fainted of course. He snatched one kiss from her lips, and rushed forth to the field of battle. The fairy had provided King Giglio with a suit of armor, which was not only embroidered all over with jewels, and blinding to your eyes to look at, but was waterproof, gunproof, and swordproof, so that in the midst of the very hottest battles his majesty rode about as calmly as if he had been a British grenadier at Alma. Were I engaged in fighting for my country, I should like such a suit of armor as Prince Giglio wore. But, you know, he was a prince of a fairy tale, and they always have these wonderful things. Besides the fairy armor, the prince had a fairy horse, which would gallop at any pace you pleased, and a fairy sword, which would lengthen, and run through a whole regiment of enemies at once. With such a weapon at command, I wonder, for my part, he thought of ordering his army out. But forth they all came, in magnificent new uniforms, heads off and the prince's two college friends each commanding a division, and his majesty prancing in person at the head of them all. Ah, if I had the pen of a Sir Archibald Alison, my dear friends, would I not now entertain you with the account of a most tremendous shindy? Should not fine blows be struck? Dreadful wounds be delivered? Arrows darken the air? Cannonballs crash through the battalions? Cavalry charge infantry? Infantry pitch into cavalry? Bugles blow, drums beat, horses neigh, fifes sing, soldiers roar, swear, hooray, officers shout out, forward, my men exclamation point T this way, lads. Gee give it 'em, boys. Fight for King Giglio, and the cause of right. K King Padella forever. Would I not describe all this, I say, and in the very finest language too? But this humble pen does not possess the skill necessary for the description of combats. In a word, The overthrow of King Padella's army was so complete that if they had been Russians, you could not have wished them to be more utterly smashed and confounded. As for that usurping monarch, having performed acts of valor much more considerable than could be expected of a royal ruffian and usurper who had such a bad cause and who was so cruel to women. As for King Padella, I say, when his army ran away, the king ran away too, kicking his first general, Prince Punchikov, from his saddle, and galloping away on the prince's horse, having, indeed, had 25 or 26 of his own shot under him. Heads off coming up, and finding Punchikov down, as you may imagine, very speedily disposed of him. Meanwhile King Padella was scampering off as hard as his horse could lay legs to ground. Fast as he scampered, I promise you somebody else galloped faster, and that individual, as no doubt you are aware, was the royal Giglio, who kept bawling out, "Stay, traitor! Turn, miscreant, and defend thyself! Stand, tyrant, coward, ruffian, royal wretch, till I cut thy ugly head from thy usurping shoulders!" And, with his fairy sword, which elongated itself at will, His Majesty kept poking and prodding Padella in the back, until that wicked monarch roared with anguish. When he was fairly brought to bay, Padella turned and dealt Prince Giglio a prodigious crack over the sconce with his battle-axe, a most enormous weapon, which had cut down I don't know how many regiments in the course of the afternoon. But, law bless you! Though the blow fell right down on His Majesty's helmet, it made no more impression than if Padella had struck him with a pat of butter. His battle axe crumpled up in Padella's hand, and the royal Giglio laughed for very scorn at the impotent efforts of that atrocious usurper. At the ill success of his blow, the Crim Tartar monarch was justly irritated. "If," says he to Giglio, "you ride a fairy horse and wear fairy armor, what on earth is the use of my hitting you? I may as well give myself up a prisoner at once. Your Majesty won't, I suppose, be so mean as to strike a poor fellow who can't strike again?" The justice of Padella's remark struck the magnanimous Giglio. "Oh, you yield yourself a prisoner, Padella?" says he. "Of course I do," says Padella. "Do you acknowledge Rosalba as your rightful queen, and give up the crown and all your treasures to your rightful mistress?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.